Get me for free. Courtesy of Yelp for Restaurant. Tools and tactics are what's going to make you successful in 2024. Yelp for Restaurants has the tools you need to scale your restaurant this year, and I'm here to help. Sign up for a consultation with Yelp Guest Manager and get a free one-hour coaching session with me. In our session, we'll dive deep into your restaurant and build the blueprint to overcome your current obstacles and scale your profitability. You can sign up for both free sessions by simply going to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp today. I'll see you soon. Now here we go.
You work in restaurants, and then you figure out systems that work for you and you continue to refine them. And I think the number one thing, you know, when I look at any sort of across the board, this is the foundation of why certain places are really great. It is consistency.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. For over 30 years, Michael Mina has dominated the restaurant scene, and today we sit down with the chef to find out how. In today's conversation, we dive deep into the tactics, tools, and strategy Michael has developed over decades to acquire talent, develop leaders, scale operations, and ensure profitability. This is a masterclass in restaurant ownership and operations.
I think there are traits that you probably are either born with or you acquire, right? And I think a lot of leadership comes from kind of the cliche of hard work, but it is true. I think that good leaders are going to put in the work and put in the effort that it takes to understand the position of the people you are leading. And I think that a lot of the mistakes that are made a lot of times is people will think that they can lead. I can lead because I'm a leader. I can go lead people in a different industry or do this, or do that. And there's some truth to that, maybe. It's never been that way for me. I think in the restaurant industry, specifically to the restaurant industry, I think it's pretty important that you have a good connection with the positions of the people that you are leading. And I think that that's an important part of it. But I think that it's also too, as you're growing up, I mean, a lot of times people will take on that role with a group of friends or whatever else, that you're kind of the one planning everything. You're kind of the one that's doing that at home, things of that nature. I had a lot of that when I was growing up. But honestly, as I have ended up spending more and more time in positions at a young age of leadership, it's taking some of those inherent core, I think, skills and or work ethic, and then sharpening them and understanding how to really get the most out of the people around you.
And you're at this prolific level of success. I mean, I would argue what 99% of people aren't able to achieve within this industry. But when you started out, was that the vision?
No. If you take it through the calendar, right, of the timing, my first chef job was in 91, 92. And at that point, it was voodoo for a chef to have more than one restaurant. So it wasn't even like there was restaurateurs who usually were a lot of, I always joke and say they were lawyers or businessmen that took advantage of chefs. And then there were some great restaurateurs too, by the way, obviously. But restaurateurs were okay to have multiple restaurants. But chefs, it was kind of voodoo. It's like, oh, well, you can't have more than one restaurant because then you're not behind the stove, blah, 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 at every restaurant and picking up every meal, which wasn't really the case in most places anyhow.
In our last conversation and in this one, systems come up time and time again. And look, everybody knows the value of systems. I coach restaurateurs. And one of the things they all say, regardless of where they are in their career, is I need systems. And so I guess my point in saying that is everybody knows that they're important, but rarely do people find the time to like build and implement systems because it's hard and because it's not fun. And because if they fail, which they typically do at the outset, you've got to constantly refine these things. How did you find, especially in the midst of all of the busyness, like the discipline to like define and refine the systems over time? Because I would assume that whatever you built for the second restaurant probably broke within a few days of opening it, right? And then you had to refine and replace as you went, right?
Yeah, it really is. I'd say there's kind of three steps to it that are really crucial, that are really important. Step number one is what I said before, is you have to be there. You have to be driving it, because as we joke about it, there's always so many really intelligent people and hardworking people that work with you. And restaurant people are passionate, right? And so people are going to have their opinion on the system and what you're asking them to do. And it's important that one, you're either there to explain it, or two, you're there to listen and hear what they have to say, and then look at it and say, okay, are we going to implement part of that or not? And have those wrap-up meetings every night with your team that literally sometimes last 3 hours, because you're fighting through just checking how you check a table to see if they're ready for the next course. That can go an hour if you really grind through it till you get the right answer. But what you do, what I always say, is once we leave this room tomorrow, this is the system we're going to use, right? Might not be the system we're going to use the day after, but we're going to use this one tomorrow. We're not going to tweak it until the end of the night. Then we will talk about it again. And then we might use it for 3 days if we think we're almost there, right? And so it's really important to do that when you're opening a restaurant, no matter what, no matter how many restaurants you've opened. You have to. There's two times that we really kind of tweak the systems. There's that, and then we do it annually. We start either end the year or start the year with going through every SOP in the company and saying, do they need to be modified based on there's a new, now we're using toast instead of micros or whatever it is, right? Whatever it is, do we need to modify them? Because there's kind of the company's core standards, the book of law, and all these things, right? And so you have to be committed to modernizing and not just saying, well, this is the way we've always done it, right? You have to be committed to that, I think, for a system to work. And then the third one that's the most important one is that I say all the time, if you're not going to use the system and you don't have compliance, you don't have a way to measure if you're using it on the backside or not, and you're not measuring it and you're not holding it accountable, don't even bother. Don't even bother. It's not coming up with the system. The hard part is holding everyone accountable to using it, because if you're going to use it 50%, usually, what you're doing is just creating chaos. You have to come up with something that this is how we're all going to do it all the time. And that's how you get a group of people to work together and be in harmony in a business where there's so many moving pieces. And so I have a person that literally came up through all of operations, everything, ran restaurants, and all she does right now is compliance. That's it. She is 100% focused. We have two people that really all they do is focus on compliance. And the reason that that is because they do compliance and career pathing. And the reason those two go hand in hand is career pathing and building people. I always say that before we ever measure or give someone a review, we got to give the restaurant a review. Because if the restaurant's not compliant to the SOPs, that poor individual has their runway for learning could be four times as slow as a restaurant that is compliant and they're in an environment where everyone is following the SOPs.
In the early days, before that person existed, before that position existed, I would assume it was you. I had my performance coach on the show probably 6 months ago. And one of the things that she said that has always resonated with me is the level of success you will achieve in your career is directly related to your ability to have difficult conversations. I have seen chefs that could easily throw a pan across the room at somebody's head, but were completely incapable of sitting down across from an individual and having what felt like an impossible conversation. How did you get good at having those tough conversations when you were curating and building and leading the team?
Well, I think one of the most important things that people have to see, because we've all, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that all of us have regrets of exactly that, of having conversations that were loaded with energy and shouldn't have been in the middle of service, right? As opposed to having, a lot of times you'd have a second conversation that was exactly when you're talking about. Now it's much better and it's much more focused to just having those conversations. And I think the most important thing, honestly, I hate to keep saying, I hate to keep going back to the same thing. You know why those conversations are so hard? They're so hard if you don't have the systems in place or the restaurant isn't following them, because they're hard to sit down and talk to somebody and say, okay, you don't care. You're not doing this or this or this, and you don't seem like you're into it. But yet the place has 10 things that you're not following systems. But if you are, the conversations actually get a lot easier because you literally go through point by point and it's very direct. And the reason that it's so important, it all goes back to me, to your responsibility as you're leading anybody, you're leading these teams and these people, is let's just say 70% of the people that are in that kitchen want to become chefs. Let's say 30%, they don't have an interest in becoming a chef. They have a great job. They work meat station every night and that's what they want to do. And that's great. A great employee, right? The 70%, the other 30% or whatever it is in the front of house, you get that a little bit more, like servers that don't want to step up, go up to be managers. But if they see that you are diligently using the systems that are in place, as well as promoting the people that do want to be promoted and career pathing them or giving them the information they need to keep moving forward in their career, it's a lot easier to, one, have those conversations, and two, to get people to buy into what this is. Because a lot of times this is really hard work. I mean, this is not easy work. Then you layer a bunch of systems they got to learn, and they got to learn the menus, and they got to learn the wine list, and they got to, you know, people think that it's kind of, I'm going to go be a server. Yeah. Well, see, go come try it. It's not nearly as easy as you think it is.
How has the talent pool changed? I mean, obviously it's shrunk, but it's the definition of a chef, I would argue, has certainly changed, especially in the last like 5 years, right? There's so many chefs without brick and mortar restaurants. How are you guys able to recruit amazing talent when there are guys out there that are incredibly talented, that are willing to just hustle? They're willing to do pop-ups for the next 10 years before settling down in a brick and mortar.
Sure. I think it goes back to, you have to invest more than you ever have in keeping people when they come to work for you and building them and growing from within. I think that that's extremely important. I think it's a two-sided sword. Everyone says that there's just way less talent. There's just way less people in the industry, things like that. Yeah. Some of the jobs were people, the pandemic, I think people did figure out. There's no doubt that Amazon and some of these people figured out, wow, these restaurant people, they work really hard. Why don't we grab some of them? these are really, really hard working people though.
Like, right.
That can handle
they don't
a lot
even
of
need
adversity.
To eat. Yes.
Why don't we grab some of them? So I think there was that. But the flip side is, what's really cool now is you can go to the middle of the country and there's great restaurants. I mean, there's great restaurants everywhere. The level of cooking and the level of food in the United States is just blown up, right? And so because of that, there's just a knowledge that's throughout our country that's grown so much with food. And so I think that if you can put together, people want to learn faster than they ever did before. They're not as willing to put in, even if they say they are, because everyone, it's really passionate. It's going to come in and say, yeah, I'll peel carrots for 6 months. You don't want them to do that anymore. You know? Right. Where before right. you're like, okay, you can have them prep or work on a behavior. Now it's more about, how do you get people to learn it? People want to do things at their speed. And if they can consume it faster and without skipping steps, you know, give it to them faster. Have the tools to give it to them faster.
Product market fit is always a hurdle. with every new concept and every new market. But also, I mean, looking at the span of your career, if we just look at the last 30 years, I mean, the American palate has evolved dramatically in that time. And so that being the case, how do you determine product market fit when it seems to be ever changing? I mean, I would argue, and you're very familiar with the area, San Francisco is a very different city today than it was 36 months ago.
100%. Absolutely. That's always a question that comes up when we have systems and we'll look at data and things of that nature. So much of it is gut feel of really studying the area and everything else and trying to put the right concept in. But I think you talk about learnings. This is probably where a lot of us have made the most mistakes, right? Is you get really confident / enamored with something you've done. And you're like, okay, well, we're pushing the envelope so far. Well, you might have broke, you might have torn the envelope. it might not be exactly what people want. It was like funny coming out of the pandemic. It was interesting to see how much people went back to their staples. Our Japanese restaurant packed, right? Because people were like, oh, I got to go have sushi. I got to go have Italian food. I got to go to the steakhouse. They wanted their staples. They wanted to get out and just have their staples right away. And then get back to, then it leveled out and it started getting back to going to the places to push the envelope more. But yeah, I mean, I've had my failures like everybody else where thought right place, right. And what's really interesting is it's not even just concept. It's the nuances of the concept now that are so important. It's like nowadays, I mean, you're going to places and you either have, you either have this very, okay, this is the concept and it's Italian and you're known as one of the best Italian restaurants in the city. And that's why it's hard to get a reservation or whatever. And then you've got restaurants that just because of the vibe and everything else, the menu could be all over the place. Doesn't matter. It's a style of food that's leaning towards that style of guest that you want. And then that needs to be in a certain location. You need to have certain things around you. And so there's nuances that you have to think through based on your concept. And it's why it's harder and harder, I think, for just the one size fits all type concepts. And I think that the other thing too, I think that you're really seeing is even if we have bourbon steaks where we have multiples of them, every market we go to, we design it based on the market. 50% of the menu is localized and based on the clientele. It's not just taking the same menu over and over again.
Once you've had a hit, and I've had the good fortune of having a couple in my life, you really figure out frequency is the name of the game, right? Anyone can be busier than shit for the first 3 months or 3 years. But ultimately, it's about giving people a reason to come back and giving people a reason to come back consistently that doesn't diminish the brand. And Lord knows, like, we exist in an industry that, you know, up until probably the pandemic was competing to see who could sell the cheapest shit for the longest period of time without going out of business. So how do you inspire frequency? What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably one of the metrics that we measure the most. It's probably one of the things we measure the most, and we measure it literally right out of the gates, because I think the first 6 months has such a huge impact on the life of a restaurant. Because you really think about the life of a restaurant, right? For the most part, if you take it just from like a financial point of view and look at it and say, okay, this restaurant, you want to pay it back, whatever it costs to build, you want to pay it back in 3 to 5 years. And that's probably why you sign a 10-year lease with a few options, right? Because you need to have a 10-year run. You need to have a minimum of 10-year run for it to make sense for something that's going to take you up to 5 years to pay back, right? To build something that you want that's going to be, cool restaurant, whatever. So that's kind of how we would look at it. To me, the places where I've seen us and other people fail miserably is you underestimate, or you're short at the beginning or whatever, and you underestimate how important that first 6 months is. And you underestimate how important it is to build up that loyalty in the first 6 months that then you can build on. That's the foundation of the restaurant forever, that you can continue to build on. I usually look at it, depending on the market, depends on the market, but a place where Vegas, like where you have a lot more transient, you measure it a little bit differently. But we try to look at it and say, okay, within that first 6 months, how do we get 3 visits? The initial visit and 2 other visits. And we measure that, how many people you get 2 visits from. And we're measuring all their visits, right? The repeat, as much as we can measure repeat. You're not going to be able to catch everybody, but you can start to measure it. And if you're measuring it against other restaurants, you can start to see how the restaurant's doing. And if you're getting very little repeat, that's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. And the biggest thing I think about, people will give you a second chance at the beginning. Yes, they, you know, service and your ability to befriend people, your ability to build those relationships, that gets you the ability if you need a second chance or if you need not to be a second chance. I mean, the way I always look at restaurants is you have a real advantage in some sense going into it because 6 people are going to eat it at your restaurant at a table, right? 1 person out of that 6 made the reservation. The other 5 want it to be a good experience because they don't want to have that awkwardness for that person at the table. The person that made the reservation wants it to be a good experience because they don't want that awkwardness. So people go in wanting it to be a good experience. And so if you really can nail the friendliness and the good service, and if you can get that piece of it right, don't try to overdo it when you first open with covers or anything else, and you can get whatever that piece of it is right, you will get a little bit of that. And then where you get the home run is by nailing it at the beginning and blowing people away so people can be like, oh my God, this new restaurant opened, blah, blah, blah. And that's when you hook them in and you get them 3 or 4 times. And then all of a sudden they're going there because they feel more important at that restaurant than anywhere else. And you're getting them in. Hopefully the restaurant's busy and you're getting them. You're holding a couple tables and getting them in and you're building up your VIPs, which ultimately we just call our PR people, you know, because they're going to give you as much PR as anybody else.
Let's talk about that, because I think that conceptually everybody listening is on board with surprise and delight, right? Especially in the early days. What a wonderful thing. But it's got to be systematized. It's got to be institutionalized, which sounds way less fun. But every restaurant, to a greater or lesser degree, is a shit show for the first 30, 60, 90 days. It's always too much volume, right? Too much demand, not enough supply, and unrefined systems for the most part. And that's true, I think, for most independent restaurateurs. So how do you implement surprise and delight in a way that feels authentic when you are busy in those early days? How do you empower your team to do that?
One thing that I would tell you that I think a lot of us really learned coming out of the pandemic is what ended up happening is so many of us had to, as you tried to reopen multiple restaurants or whatnot, you learn that, oh my God, if I only run this restaurant for 5 days, it actually, the numbers work, right?
Yeah.
Where it felt they were never going to work. And then if I run it for 4 days, you know, the numbers work. And I think one of the mistakes that people make, I don't know, have you been to the Tin Building in New York,
John? Yeah.
Or just to me, that I just think it's phenomenal. I think it's phenomenal. If you ask me, you know, John George, he's at the very top of my list of chefs. I have loved his work since the first time I had his food. And I just think that he's absolutely brilliant and brings things to life in just a magical way. And I think the Tin Building is just something unbelievable. And watching that open and watching him open it for 3 days a week and then to 4 days, then to 5 days, it's really smart when you think about it because there were so many moving pieces. Well, you take that same approach and think about it as a small restaurant, a small restaurateur, or a small restaurant owner. Don't get into a thing where you feel like you have to open right away 6 or 7 days a week. And so that the surprise and delights can still happen. So you have time with your team to conceptualize what that is and give everybody. So it's just not like a motor that's going. So maybe you open 4 days a week at the beginning and you don't hire quite as many people at the beginning, and then you build up to that 5th day and then build up to that 6th day.
Well, from a reputational place, forgetting execution entirely, it's going to give you what you want, which is a reputation for being busy, which is the only objectively secure reputation there is. when I talk to my clients, I say, you look at Los Angeles as a great example. You and I could go back and forth arguing what the best Italian restaurant in Los Angeles is, but we can't argue which one is the busiest, right? It's Bestia. It's been the busiest since the day that it opened. It's an objective fact. And that reputation for being busy keeps them perpetually busy, along with obviously consistent offering and consistent service. So I think that that's a key point that you're bringing up that would be massive. There's so much waste when it comes to hours of operation relative to demand.
And honestly, we use it now as a surprise and delight almost. It's like as you start to build your VIP database and you're communicating with them when that next day is going to open and blah, blah, blah. Now, as I use it as I do multiple friends and family days now. So now it's like the opening, there's friends and family, right? For training, 1 or 2 days, right? Then when we're going to go to let's say we open for 4 days and we're going to go to the 5th day, I'll ask the VIPs to come in. The people that are, I said, okay, you're going to come help us get the new staff trained. We have you new hires for the 5th day or whatever. And we'll do like a little kind of celebration for that 5th day. And we do it all from the beginning. And it actually works out kind of nice. It makes it a little bit of a celebration that you've made it over the hump and you're going to open that 5th day or you're going to open that 6th day or whatnot.
What should we steal from you? What are the tactics, tools, and strategies that other people could employ to achieve some semblance of the success that you have?
I mean, honestly, I think that you work in restaurants and then you figure out systems that work for you and you continue to refine them. And I think the number one thing, you know, when I look at any sort of across the board, this is the foundation of why certain places are really great. It is consistency, and consistency comes from just a few things. It's just like, it's making sure that people are knowledgeable, and that's hard. And you talked about those hard conversations. The hardest conversation is still, like when we're opening a restaurant, it's still sitting down. I still, to this day, will sit down and the wait staff comes over to you one at a time and you act like you're the guest and they give you the whole menu pitch and they do all this. That's really hard because people completely break down. If they can do it for you, they can do it for anybody, right? And they completely break down and it's emotional, it's hard. And that's a hard conversation. And that's not even a conversation. It's hard to sit on either side of that table and have that happen, right? And I think that that's the start of it all, is you either are going to be like, oh, okay, don't worry about it. Or you're going to stay the course and say, okay, we'll do it again tomorrow. We'll do it again the next day. We're going to do it till you get it right. And we're just going to keep doing it until you get it right. And I think that a lot of times in this business, people aren't willing to do that. There's always the excuse that it's impossible to staff. So your staff is going to be how good the restaurant is. I mean, you're not doing every restaurant. And so the more you continually make sure that the leadership in the restaurant is making sure, as working with the staff to get them to that place where they are confident, they have the knowledge to be confident and their true personality comes out. To me, that's the best thing you can steal from anybody or get from anybody, is getting people to that point. Because once they get to that point, they're great. And the best way to get them to that point is, honestly, we kind of call it the training wheel station. We'd have stations in the kitchen if somebody's cooking and they might just have one dish. They're going to do that dish over and over and over again. Then they get 2 dishes, then they get 3 dishes, but at least they're doing it right. And so they're starting to build that muscle memory of doing things the right way.
Last question I have for you, Chef. Our industry is filled with all of these unspoken rules and traditions about how things should be done. How would you like to see the restaurant industry turn the tables to create a better future for all of us?
We have growth to do. There's no doubt about it. I've done a lot myself in the sense of looking at it and saying, didn't need to do it the way we did it back in the day, even though you thought it was, because that's the way you came up, right? It's nice to see that we're doing it in a new way. And I think that's going to continue to move forward without losing the magic of what's so special about this industry of, we are giving people. We are giving people. People in this industry, I don't want to ever see that go away. I don't want to see this become, it's like that the celebrity factor takes away, builds an industry where you're not, where we lose that giving piece that we have, that everyone in this industry seems to have that succeeds in this industry. And I think that that's really important. And I think that that's something that what I've really enjoyed seeing in this industry right now is, even as kind of like music and movies, things of that nature, as things change, they become the same, but they're better. People are better. People are better at what they do. They're more educated with it or whatnot. And so it continues to move forward. So you see one group that I absolutely love is Big Mama. And it's just like seeing these cool, fun Italian restaurants, you know, like that are changing the boundaries of how you do things, but yet they're still great. They're still great. I think it's fun. I'm enjoying that.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. That's Michael Mina. For more information on the chef and his restaurant group, visit michaelmina.net. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Copel. You've been listening to Full Comp.